today: why there are high levels of vaccine hesitancy within Black and minority ethnic communities. In recent weeks, amid grim news about emerging strains of COVID and tougher restrictions, one story has brought many of us hope: the UK's vaccination programme. As of yesterday, more than 6 million people have had their first dose. But not everyone wants one. Dr. Annabel Shoemimo has spent months trying to convince her own family that the vaccine is safe.
One older member of my family, when I asked them about the vaccine, they mentioned interactions with one of their previous GPs and them not having their best interests at heart, and had equated that back to, you know, the vaccine not being something that they would be willing to take because medical professionals sometimes aren't honest.
Do you ever find these conversations frustrating?
They can be frustrating. However, I've also experienced biased medical care, unpleasant examples. And if I hadn't been a medical professional, I don't think I would have also been particularly willing to want to engage with further investigations, tests, or take up the vaccine. So I understand frustration, but I understand.
Figures released last week showed that even though the pandemic has hit them particularly hard, Black and minority ethnic communities are far more hesitant to have the jab. This has led the government to announce that they're investing millions into encouraging vaccine take-up amongst these groups and tackling misinformation that is being spread online. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus: why so many people from ethnic minority backgrounds are unsure about the COVID vaccine. Nazia Parveen, you're a community affairs correspondent for The Guardian, and you've spent a lot of time over the past 10 months speaking to ethnic minority groups about the disproportionate impact COVID has had on their lives. What have you found?
Back in May, I did a piece on a group of 5 Asian men. They were all friends, all 50 or over, and between them, they had 41 grandchildren. They were entrepreneurs, counsellors, and they were described as the backbone of the community, the keepers of this community's history, and all of them died.
Gosh.
That was the moment where it became absolutely clear to me that this was a disease that was thriving on decades of inequality within clinical commissioning, where the health needs of these smaller population groups were consistently and historically not being met. And because of that, this deadly disease was able to easily carve its way through these communities. When you get the data to back up what people are telling you, I think that's when it really kind of hits home. Mm. That people aren't just saying this. They are genuinely communities being wiped out, whether that's in the Midlands or whether that's in Brent. And data from the first wave of the pandemic shows that ethnic minorities were up to twice as likely to die from COVID. Mortality rates for Black African and Bangladeshi men aged 9 to 64 were around 5 times the rate among white men of the same age. And then with the second wave, we're still not seeing any improvement, really.
Yeah, you know, you give those figures, but what you just described is the stories behind them, that the number of deaths is not perhaps spread out in all cases. It's very concentrated in communities, in families, isn't it?
You know, I personally don't know anybody who has died from coronavirus. I know people who have had it, but I don't know anybody who has died. And then Amir Awan, who I spoke to the other day, is the son of one of those men who died last year. And he said to me just the other day that he was still getting daily reports of relatives and friends dying from coronavirus. And he knew of, over the weekend, 3 people who he knew who had died from it. So it's sometimes very difficult to understand quite how badly these communities have been affected.
When did you first become aware that for some people within these communities, they might be resistant to having a vaccine?
I first had an inkling that we might be heading this way during the trials for the vaccine. So late October, beginning of November, and ethnic minority groups were underrepresented in the clinical trials in the UK, despite all the research showing that they were disproportionately affected by coronavirus. So we had a kind of inkling that this might become a thing.
There is some polling data available on this now. What does that tell us about who is hesitant about having the vaccine?
So I think people started to really worry when we had some very recent data from the British longitudinal study. And researchers contacted just over 12,000 people. Overall, there were high levels of willingness to be vaccinated, with 82% of people saying they were likely or very likely to have the jab. But hesitancy was particularly high among people from Black groups. 72% said they were unlikely or very unlikely to be vaccinated. Amongst Pakistani and Bangladeshi groups, this figure was 42%. And then Eastern European groups were also less willing. We had a poll which was conducted by the Royal Society for Public Health. And in that study, 57% of respondents from BAME backgrounds would take a COVID jab if advised by their GP or another health professional, compared with 79% of white respondents.
Is this hesitancy towards vaccines within minority communities very new, or is this something we've seen before?
No, it's definitely something that we've seen before. So for adult vaccination programs, there was consistently reduced vaccination uptake in Black Caribbean and Black African populations at around 50% compared to the white population, where it was 70%. And then within South Asian groups, people of Pakistani origin had significantly lower vaccine uptake.
Of the more than 6 million people who have already had the jab, do we know how many are BAME?
We don't have a breakdown by ethnicity yet. Hopefully that will come soon. Because at the moment, we've got all of these surveys saying a lot of them are not going to have it. But it would be interesting to compare what the actual real picture is.
Do we know anecdotally if older people within ethnic minority communities are already shunning the vaccine if they're over 80 and currently eligible?
I have heard this. I have been told that there is an issue with the older generations where they are refusing the vaccine. And we are in a situation where younger family members are trying to convince them.
Were you at all surprised to get this sense that people were hesitant about it?
No, because you're talking about communities here who do have a mistrust of the government and sometimes health professionals. So the fact that they were feeling slightly jittery about this vaccine, no, I wouldn't say I was surprised by that, no.
Let's look at some of the reasons behind why ethnic minority groups might not want to get the vaccine. What are some of the fears that people have?
Okay, so you've got some of your standard really mad theories, like it will inject a microchip so Bill Gates can track your every move.
Yeah, this has been on social media a lot.
Yeah, and this is not just for this community. I think this is like for everybody. It will turn you into a monkey is another one I've heard. It will alter your DNA, that it contains lung tissue from an aborted fetus. So they're the really sort of crazy conspiracy theories. But then you've got some slightly more subtle where you're playing on people's real concerns. And for Muslim people, there have been claims that the vaccine contains pork and gelatin, which is haram, which means it's not permissible to have it under Islam. Another one that's been concerning for the Muslim community is that there is alcohol in the vaccine. And then in the Indian community, you've had it could affect your fertility. And then I think you've got the sort of speed at which the vaccine was developed, that it's come around quite quickly and there's not this sort of confidence in it. And some of these commentators who are peddling these theories have been able to play on that a little bit. And so that's another reason that people are scared of it.
And it's important to point out here, Nazia, that these vaccines are safe. They don't contain pork or alcohol or any of the things you've mentioned. Are these rumours mostly being spread on social media?
Yeah, social media mainly, so Facebook. But on the whole, it's been through the dreaded WhatsApp groups, which we all routinely get added to without our permission sometimes. And we've had tons and tons of videos being shared on these WhatsApp groups, whether it's a guy stood outside a vaccination centre in Batley.
This vaccine, which is untried, untested, unlicensed, developed within a year, which is virtually impossible.
And one of the pieces I wrote last week was about this guy in Birmingham, and he's been using Facebook to spread his theories about the vaccine.
COVID narrative is that it affects BAME people more than others. This is the narrative. I'm not buying it. I don't buy it.
He doesn't believe in coronavirus. That's his first thing. He talks about lots of theories about why this is some kind of state-constructed thing to keep us under watch, like a Big Brother type situation.
I'm just as qualified as Bill Gates is. Bill Gates has got no more scientific qualification than I've got.
And he consistently describes himself as an intelligent man. Everybody who's listening to me is intelligent. I'm not preaching.
What people do is entirely their choice. Everybody here is an intelligent adult making their own decisions.
The other worrying thing for me when I was watching him yesterday, and some of the other people as well, is that these people maybe have not been in a situation before where they've been listened to, and they are very much enjoying their moment in the sun.
Guys, those of you who are lining up for the miracle treatment that the government is handing out, the jab, you know what it is? I'm trying not to say the word purely because I don't want to get censored. I don't want my video taken down, because a lot of people have commented and made the time to be here. So,
and you get a bit of an insight to him as well, actually, in that he speaks about his mother who died of cancer 20 years ago. And he claims that she had actually recovered from the cancer, but the reason that she died is because she was put on a clinical drug trial. And he blames that drug trial for her death.
My mother died not from cancer 20 years ago, but my mother was killed by experimental drugs. And from that day on, I became extremely suspicious of Big Pharma.
So you can kind of see why he's ended up where he has.
I mean, how much influence does he have?
If you take him as a single example, he only has 1,700 followers. I mean, some of my friends have more followers than that on Facebook, just from their mates. But he is one of many examples. And what we were hearing from imams and other community leaders is that these individuals may seem like small fry taken on their own, but when you've got lots of them all saying the same thing, it starts to sow the seed of doubt and it starts to gain momentum.
You mentioned concern from imams in communities. Are there efforts being made to combat the myths that are being spread by some of these individuals?
Yeah, absolutely. So Friday prayers last week, we had around 100 mosques where they used a prayer time to raise coronavirus awareness and to dispel some of these myths surrounding the vaccinations.
And we are confident that these two vaccines do not contain gelatin or any animal product or a human embryo cell or alcohol.
Some imams have even agreed to be filmed being vaccinated in order to inspire confidence. In Preston, you had a teacher make a collection of short videos of young children urging their grandparents to have the vaccine in a variety of South Asian languages. I mean, I don't know how much more on a community level people can do. They've done absolutely tons. Where we're seeing not enough being done is on a government level.
Annabel Shawamimo, you're a doctor who specialises in community and sexual reproductive health. We've heard from Nazia Parveen about the high levels of vaccine hesitancy in BAME communities, and you focus on the wider context to this, which is the relationship between these groups and the health service. What does that look like in your experience?
So when we talk about medical mistrust and Black minority ethnic communities, I think something that's really important for us to start understanding is that Black minority ethnic encompasses a wide range of cultures and races, and it's really important that we don't homogenize. Sometimes the issues can be related because it often relates to what it means to navigate a health system when you are clearly othered. So if you are a Black or a brown person that enters a hospital in an area that rarely has any Black patients, what does that mean? What does that look like? But I think when we look at the vaccine, there are separate issues that pertain to different communities. When I speak about the experiences of the Black community, sometimes there's quite a lot of concern about historical issues in terms of previous abuses that have happened, trials that have been conducted where people haven't been properly consented, or drugs that have proved to be teratogenic, which can cause fetal abnormalities or cause infertility issues. And I think people sometimes know some of the history, but not the full facts, and then equate that to a medical system or institution that is just like inherently bad for their community and a tool sometimes of white supremacy.
Do you have particular examples of why Black people might feel like this about the health service?
Often stories about what happened to Black Americans are more widely known because of how that's been disseminated. So often people pick up on things like the Tuskegee trials.
Through candles and song, loved ones remember their relatives who were subject to a cruel medical experiment at the hands of the United States government.
They were never told that they had the disease.
For 40 years, starting in 1932, medical workers withheld treatment for hundreds of unsuspecting Black men infected with syphilis. The purpose? So doctors could track the ravages of the horrid illness and dissect their bodies afterward in what became known as the Tuskegee study.
Now, although that's not an example that seems directly relevant to the UK, in terms of globalization, there were lots of social media figures that use an example like Tuskegee to say we should be hesitant about taking COVID-19 vaccine. When we look globally, there was a polio program in Nigeria, which failed, and there was poor uptake there because local people were very concerned that they were being injected with a medication that would cause infertility. And whereas some people might say that's really ridiculous, there unfortunately have been gross misuse of that injection in the past. It was banned at one point in Zimbabwe, and in part that was because of its misuse on Black farm workers by a white minority government. So there are these stories and this history of when medicine has been cruel, particularly over the time of colonization when modern medicine was developing. And although this stuff seems like really distant, I think we see how these narratives come to the fore in terms of recent conversations. So at the beginning of the pandemic, we saw two French scientists pulled up about the suggestion that the vaccine should be trialed on Africans on the continent.
En Afrique, où il n'y a pas de masque, pas de traitement, pas de réanimation, un peu comme c'est fait d'ailleurs.
People were rightly upset that that kind of colonial idea that we'll try the vaccine over there on these people and then export it back to Europe. This kind of behaviour really just sits with how global healthcare has played out in previous pandemics, really. So when we look at things like HIV and the plight for antiretroviral drugs, it's very similar story. They were developed using experimentation in sub-Saharan Africa, where a lot of people were dying. However, the pharmaceutical industry didn't make them widely available to that community at the same pace that they were made available in the global north. And some of these things people remember, people do hold on to. So when we address vaccine hesitancy among certain communities, I think it's really important that we're not patronizing people, because although their ideas may seem preposterous and we might be like, why don't you want that vaccine? There's actually quite a good history for why they might be reluctant to take it.
And talking about experiences, you know, in your own work, have you seen people being treated differently from white people based on their ethnic background within the health service?
I think that racism within medicine is something that is reflected in our data sets. What we saw recently with the Black maternal mortality statistics, where Black women are still 4 times more likely to die in childbirth. We've got other statistics, which in part is explained by socioeconomic issues and access to care. But then there's also things that we struggle to explain. And I think it's an area that people don't really want to talk about because it's something that makes people obviously uncomfortable. Because of the work that I do, I'm more aware that in the data sets and things like that, the patients that often do badly are patients that either have language barriers, are less well off and feel less confident being able to ask for what they need in the system. So I make extra effort with those patients because I keep trying to have these health inequalities in my mind to make me always question my behaviour and go the extra mile. However, a lot of providers aren't aware of that. And I think sometimes the patients that are the most well-spoken, the most well-dressed, the most assertive will often get their demands met.
Taking all this into account then, Annabelle, how do you think the messaging around encouraging ethnic minority communities to take up the vaccine could be improved?
We've seen on news channels almost every day throughout the pandemic, medical professionals coming on TV where they can answer questions from the public. And I think we need a lot more of that, to be honest. I think we need a lot more visibility of professionals from certain communities answering those questions and in spaces where people feel that they can ask questions that people might think are silly or address these concerns. I don't think having the same old faces from institutions which people don't trust anyway is going to be particularly useful. I do think we need more space given to GPs that people have built up 10, 20 year relationships with to go and have conversations with their patients about trying to take up the vaccine. Obviously, health professionals are stretched at the moment. They need support to do that work and they need resources to do that work. But I think that's really the only thing that's going to help. I don't think huge, large public health messaging for certain communities is going to be particularly effective.
Coming up, could BAME groups be prioritised for the vaccine? And would that encourage more people to have it? Nazia, what has the government done to try and persuade people from BAME backgrounds that this vaccine is safe?
So up until yesterday, they'd been worryingly quiet on this, but then they announced a just over 23 million funding to 60 councils and voluntary groups across England to support those most at risk from COVID-19 and to boost vaccine take up. So what this funding is apparently for is a community champion scheme where individuals will go into what they describe as hard to reach groups. So older people, disabled people and people from ethnic minorities. And they will, I assume, try to convince them to have the vaccine and provide them with information that will sort of debunk any myths that they've been hearing. This is great. It's probably a bit late in the day. And yesterday morning, I spoke to the Labour MP, Harriet Harman, and her concern is that her very diverse borough of Southwark hasn't received any funding. They aren't on the list. So why Southwark hasn't received any funding, I'm not sure.
Last week, The Guardian broke the story that foreign health workers, who we know are more likely to be BAME, are at risk of being denied vaccinations because you need an NHS patient number to get one. The Department of Health has denied this, but there have been calls, haven't there, to prioritise BAME people for the vaccine. Do you think that this might offer some reassurance for people that are worried about it?
Yes, absolutely. I know I keep saying this, but people within these communities have experienced a lot of illness and death during this pandemic. And the reasons for that is because of years of their health needs not being understood and there being inequality. And yet we haven't been given priority for this jab. It just cements for them why they don't trust the government. And I suppose for many people makes it feel like they're not really cared about. And it makes them, I guess, just think, well, why should we have this vaccine and believe that we are going to be looked after? So I think if they were to be prioritised for the vaccine, it would really make a difference.
How worried do you think we should be about this, Nazia? I mean, do you think we could find ourselves in a situation where some areas of the country are protected against COVID while others aren't, depending on levels of diversity in those places?
I think the biggest worry is that people who are already adversely affected by this disease will continue to get it and to die from it because they haven't been vaccinated. And I think that's something that the vaccines minister, Nadeem Sahawi, said as well. There is a very, very real concern that the disease could stay very, very live within these communities if the uptake of the vaccine is low.
Because my big worry is if 85% of the adult population get vaccinated, if the 15% skews heavily to the AME community, the virus will very quickly infect that community and really...
Some of whom are more vulnerable anyway, aren't they?
Absolutely.
The data that I talked about from the first wave, where BAME people were twice as likely to die from coronavirus. You know, we could be in a year's time looking back at now, and the data could be even worse because BAME people didn't have the vaccine. And that, you know, that really scares me. So I am really worried about it. But an imam I spoke to last night said that he feels just in the last couple of days that the tide is turning. And hopefully this is just a case of new medication jitters. And he was hopeful that contrary to what all the surveys are saying, in reality, the uptake of this vaccine will be much higher.
Nazia, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Nazia Parveen and Annabelle Shoemimo. Read more of Nazia's work, including her amazing reporting on the BAME communities that have been affected by coronavirus, at theguardian.com. You can learn more about Annabelle's work through her advocacy group, Decolonising Contraception. Nazia talked about a video blogger in Birmingham in this episode, and we did reach out to him for comment, but he didn't respond in time for publication. One of the French doctors that Annabelle mentioned has apologised for his comments about testing a COVID vaccine in African countries. If you do know anyone who is hesitant about having the vaccine, we've made lots of Today in Focus episodes about them, which can offer some reassurance. I recommend A Vaccine Revolution with Sarah Bosley from November, and COVID, Vaccinating Our Way Out of a Crisis, with the Observer Science editor, Robin McKee. The Science Weekly podcast team have also made some brilliant episodes about this. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Courtney Youssef and Toby Thomas. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.